What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbooks apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet.
The men's tournament is a blast every year, but I'm hyped for the women's tourney too. Got to tap in to see Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, and Juju Watkins. North Carolina listeners, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code Jenkins. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code Jenkins. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8777-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It is Saturday, March 30th, and we've got a special mailbag episode. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in with your questions. We got some funny ones. We got some heartfelt ones. It's a true Jenkins and Jones milieu.
Milieu. Word of the day, huh?
Word of the day. I like saying words like that just because John's reaction is always so funny when you hit him with a word he wasn't expecting. As always, Jenkins and Jones, hosted by LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubbas?
Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody. Have a good one.
I'm Guardy B, a.k.a. Mike.
Motherfucking Mike.
And we're produced, as always, by the lovely and talented Jackson Saffron.
What's up?
What's up? I have a group chat
where people, my homies, called Milieu Blue.
Oh.
Where he sends, like, words of the day.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So
you have a group chat that sends you words of the day?
It's the homie. He's like, yeah, he just sends words.
I didn't know that was a way I was allowed to annoy my friends. You might be in a second one of those group chats,
bro. Hey, nigga, tap in if you want to get, yeah. I would love that.
All right. Also, as I was reading off the list, we got to shout out Biko. Round of applause for Biko. Biko's last episode with us. She's been like, she was like the day one homie with the Volume.
The and then homie
she was
homie.
Being homies with the other homies. And now she's the homie with us again. But now she's focusing on being in Turkey Provolone. And we're going to miss her.
But she's always the homie.
She's still always the homie.
Always the homie. You feel
yes.
me?
Once the homie, right. Always the homie.
Love you, Biko.
Love you.
All right. We got some good ones. Let me hold on. Let me start with the funniest one to me. This is from John. He says the subject line is Justice for Booger Boy of the Week. He says, "Fellas, I greet you in the joy of my ancestral home, Detroit. What up, though? This is John, aka Detroit Player. What happened with Booger Boy of the Week? Y'all switched to Dookie Butt, and we never got to say goodbye.
I feel like when Bayheim rode off into the sunset, we kind of like, you know, because it was after him, right? The motherfucker eats boogers. Like, he's on Phil. I tell people every chance I get, motherfucker John Bayheim has been on Phil multiple times eating boogers, bro. And that's kind of where we got that. But then we just kind of branched off because, you know, fuck Bayheim in the bigger scheme of things, too. So, you know, even on a bullshit, like, you know, commemorary award like that. But yeah.
Yeah.
Are we going to run it back ever so often, maybe? Just shout out to... Or do maybe the next one we do, Booger Boy, just so people can say goodbye to it.
I
will add
that, like, Jackson and I legitimately were, like, very intent on getting us, like, a Mucinex or, like, a Kleenex sponsorship, and it never worked out. So it was like, maybe we'll get a Charmin one for Dookie Butt of the Week. I don't know.
Maybe we were a week away from getting it. Maybe we quit too early, guys. You know what I'm saying? We went one more, we could have got that Mucinex shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Come on. Maybe we gave up.
I feel like the vibes might not be good enough for Charmin to sign on. They got them cute ass bears and shit. We could probably get like, you know, the fucking fast food toilet paper rolls that are this fucking big.
I don't want to promote that.
Like, they might want to fuck with us, but I don't see Charmin. They're too wholesome to fuck with this shit.
Single ply only. Yeah. I didn't think about the challenge of it being a segment we wanted sponsored where all we talk about is like neo-Nazis and like.
Yeah, all we talk about is motherfuckers we cannot stand. The worst motherfuckers of this week.
If it's toilet paper, it has to be Charmin, though. I don't put nothing else in my butt, bro. Period,
G. You're a Charmin man?
Oh, yeah, bro. Y'all, are y'all Angel Soft? Don't tell me that.
I'm a Cottonelle Wipes man, my friend. Nah,
Charmin. Oh, wipes. I respect it. I truly respect the wet wipes.
I thought you were a white man.
I went away from it as when I got married. You know what I mean? I probably should go back to it, you know? It adds like another two or three wipes.
The question that we asked on the podcast the last time we discussed this was, if you drop poop on the ground, would you wipe it up with a dry paper towel and walk away? Or would you involve some cleaner?
The logic is impenetrable. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to argue with you at all. You know what I mean? It's just, we make family decisions over here, and I don't make all the decisions. You know what I mean? Maybe I should make the wet wipes, though, man. It's definitely, the brand will definitely be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Come on, man. No, we ain't Cottonelle over here.
Feeling better than taking those fiber supplements and using wet wipes. I'm just saying that, you know?
I think we switch roles. I used to put you on like the exfoliating shit. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'm like, here, get this lotion for your under your eyes. You know, that really, you know what I mean? And now you're fibered up. You feel me? Wet wipes. I'm slipping, dog.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Also, because this is Detroit Player and he is one of our favorite fans, a dude who's awesome. One of the most positive people on social media. He asked, and Jackson, if you want to cut this, you can cut this, but I think this is funny. He said, also, it's funny to hear John and Tyler reading ad copy now because it used to just be Mike. Was this something put into y'all contract? Yes.
Yes, we will leave it at that. We love our sponsors, and thank you for inviting us into the fold. We are so happy to be here.
Indeed.
I love that. That's how you know.
Jackson, are you cutting that or not? Are we keeping that or will we? No. Okay, cool.
I personally would like to thank Hyundai for helping me find my voice in ad reads. Forever grateful.
That's a fact.
Our personality.
All right. This is from Avery. My name is Avery at DJ Honest Ave, AVE one on Twitter. The Jenkins Jones pod. Okay. As always, I don't read compliments, but thank you to everyone who gave us compliments. My question is, do you think there will ever be an era in music similar to the blog era ever again?
Ooh. That's a good question, because it feels like the blog era was a new frontier, right? Like, I feel like, you know, the genesis of the blog era, you have to go all the way back to like Kanye in 2004, right? I think that's the genesis of it, because, you know, Kanye in 2004, when he dropped College Dropout, he dropped that in the midst of the fucking super gangsta era, in the midst of, you know, G-Unit's run, Dipset's run. And here was this regular motherfucker wearing pink polos and shit and just talk about how he hated his job at the Gap, right? And that just wasn't the norm. But that became the norm in the blog era. It was like a bunch of regular non-threatening dudes who were like, yo, I like smoking. I like wearing fresh shoes. I like driving old school cars. And there's a lane for me now here. I don't need to be a gangster. I don't need to be a tough guy. Right. And like I said, Kanye opened those doors. And then we had the whole uploading frontier where people were uploading their own music, where they cut the middleman out. You didn't need a label, you know, pushing your shit. All you needed was a motherfucking zippy file or upshare or whatever the fuck. Or you shoot your shit to two dope boys or not. Right. And they post your shit. Right. So it was all just a new frontier. And it was a new frontier in subject matter. It was a new frontier in a business model. And I just don't know if we'll ever get that perfect storm like that ever again.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think so. But I remember, like, there were so many places I could go, whether I wanted to listen to new music or some creative ideas. There was all these websites I could go to look at this shit. I'm like, where do people go to be inspired? Where do people go for new music? It's all seemed like it's in the like Spotify algorithms are deciding what new music you find and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? I think like, you know, companies have found ways to commodify, you know, finding new music and the things that we loved about the blog era. And so like, I don't see it happening again. I just don't see that. But I wonder where these shorties go in order to get the experiences we had, because it was so special. You know what I mean? Like, and also it felt like it was ours in a particular way. You know, and I don't see that in music now, where, you know, this is, you know, I think like the music business has their hands in everything at this point. You feel me?
They have their hands in everything and nothing. And my answer to this question would be a definitive no, because I think the 2000s was a special time to be a young person. There was this increase in technology that allowed people who were not the traditional gatekeepers to have a voice in everything, music, journalism, comedy, entertainment, mm-hmm. anything you want to point to. But there was still, the gates had just opened to everyone. And so there still were the ability for there to be a concentration around four or five new voices who still had a reach similar to like a Rolling Stone or like a traditional legacy publication. I actually, not to get super dorky about this, I think Tyler's Twitter account is a great example of this. I don't think there will be another Dragonfly Jones Twitter account. There's 2 million people trying to be Tyler right now. Like that, right? I mean, like, there was Tyler in 2008.
Right.
And so, like, everyone has access to this stuff now. And because everyone has access to it, I mean... it's really hard for something of quality to command an audience at this point. We talk about this with television, like these shows, you feel like everyone, you know, are watching, they're getting like a million viewers. Like you're not getting what the 11 PM, you know, syndicated Seinfeld episode was getting when we were kids, like mm-hmm. on the biggest TV shows that are out there now. So I don't think it's possible for there to be a concentration of eyeballs around self-built media at this point, to be honest with you. You know, I don't really see that happening. This is my big thing though, is like, what is cyclical versus what is like actual change generationally? And I think technology has made that a harder than ever, you know, question answer. There will always be like trusted voices. I just don't think, like John said, man, it's the truth is we've given that over to the algorithms. Like most people get their information through social media, and social media is run by algorithms designed to make us angry. So that's the fucking reality of the world we're living in.
Yeah, I don't know if there'll ever be another blog era, but I do think there is going to be an artist or a handful of artists who are going to shake shit up soon. And I hope these motherfuckers come soon, because buddy, I am getting tired. Like we need, you know, a 0350 or a 04 Wheezy, you know what I'm saying, or, you know, to come through and shake shit up, because right now shit's a little stagnant. Albums, bro,
that's it,
bro. Like, I'm on this. I don't even, we don't, bro, not only
jazz albums,
we don't have that, we also don't have a currency. You know what I'm saying? Like, who is current, who is the dude that's under the you know, the radar a little bit, to where he's not popping on radio, but that everybody's fucking with and riding with. You know what I'm saying? Like, who is that guy? Like, we don't, it's so different now. And as a person that has always loved new music and is searching for, you know, just naturally, you know, I'm not really searching, just naturally, you know, finding new shit. I've always been that way. Just out of pure curiosity. I don't, nothing really interests me at this point. And I thought it could be old age, you know what I mean? But I'm talking to people that are 10 years younger than me that feel the exact same way. I listen to Harley. That's why I love Schoolboy Q's album, because it made me like rap. There's not a lot of rap that I just fuck with right now. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is because I don't know what's, you know, there's not a lot of new dudes that I'm really running into. You know what I'm saying? Like, was it Kenny Mason? You know what I'm saying? I'll find him every 3 months. You know what I mean? Like, I was finding a new person to fuck with every 3 weeks. Prior, during the blog era, it's just so different, you know? Like, everybody has access to the same things to where they can blow up. But because everybody has access, it's kind of harder. Part of it, like why Tyler's, because Tyler was on there in 2008. And I remember following him when he had 600 followers. You know what I mean? Like, the space ain't the same space no more. You know what I mean? Like you said, there's already a Tyler out here. We don't need another Tyler.
Had me excited to follow
And he's the
Tyler.
Only one-on-one in the world, too. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
But the thing that had me going to my friends was like, imagine if your favorite TV show was on 24 hours a day and it was the funniest fucking dude ever. When I say that sentence, I'm saying it in horror about like all of social media. Not about Tyler, but now it's like,
remember
when we used to turn this off? Do you remember when a bridge could collapse without people immediately going, what's my angle on this? You know,
it happened in a black city. Let's blame black people.
Right. Bro, DEI mayor, we got to jump on that. You know what I mean? Like, bro.
Did you see his response to that? He said DEI stands for duly elected incumbent. In my case.
Dragged his nuts. Love to see it.
I'll fuck with it. Okay, I like this one from Spencer Lee. Would Kendrick be better or worse if he was 6'4" instead of 5'4"?
Go ahead, Tyler.
I feel like he's got little man complex in a great way, right? Not in a self-conscious and an insecure way. He's got little man complex in like a pit bull way. You know what I mean? Like he wants to.
Like he might really beat your ass.
Yeah. Right. So 6'4" Kendrick. No. I don't think he's the same guy. That's a weird question, but a good fucking question.
Yeah.
I think the thing like with being 6'4" is niggas who are 6'4", that's their personality. You know what I mean? We like you see them put it in their bio. I'm 6'4". We'll see niggas. You know what I mean? Put that in their bio. That's their height is who they are. So I don't know if a guy who, you know, is 6'4" is going to have, you know, have to be, you know, fight the way Kendrick fought for attention. You know what I'm saying? Or yeah, I just don't see that. Or develop in the way Kendrick developed. You know what I mean? Mentally.
I co-sign everything you guys just said. I don't think that anyone would be better at anything that is not sports by being 6'4" from 5'4". Like that's just the
yeah. I think
you're venturing into terrible guy territory.
Six two is like the cutoff. When you can say you're 6'2" is like you're tall for you're tall on paper to people, but you're not tall in person.
Right.
6'3" is when like this nigga. You know what I mean? And it's that's when you start veering into, you know, you're going to put it on your bio. You know what I mean? Like,
this is so funny that you said that because Vinny's height has projected. He's been like 98th percentile height his whole life. He's been project every time on the growth chart. Yeah. He goes to 6'2 to 6'4. And every time I see that, I go, I hope it's 6'2. Like
6'3" is when it starts getting weird, bro. 6'3" you know what I mean?
Starts getting a little weird. 6'4" is like, oh man,
you out of there, bro. Kid, you know what I mean? Got
the curly hair, like let's keep it at 6'2", brother.
He'll go crazy on IG though. If he's still around, he will be doing numbers, my brother.
Yeah. And I also love how Kendrick leans into it. Like he said, "Don't ever tell him you met me, girl. 5'7", I'm messy, girl." Like he compared himself to Lionel Messi. He didn't say he's rap LeBron. Like you know what I'm saying? He's leaning into the short guy representation. So, just the Kendrick, man.
Right.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't Nick?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
All right, Josh F. asks, what's the best piece of advice you've gotten for life in your 30s? And then he has, actually, I'll give both parts of the question. He says, also, what are the most or least problematic hobbies in general? Like, what hobbies would make you decide a person is cool or make you decide you never want to see them again when you hear them? I can start with the life advice because someone asked this on Twitter. My advice to anyone in their 20s or 30s is if you don't yet have to stretch to live comfortably, start stretching now. Just 10 minutes a day, build it into a normal daily routine. Because you will reach that point at some point in your life. And if you are already stretching, it won't feel like you're being forced to do it. You know what I mean?
We've definitely switched spots. We've definitely switched.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, I need to stretch. I used to be the self, you know.
I knew I was recording right after I dropped the kids off. So I did my upper body stretches on the walk home from school today.
I love that. I stretch when I work out, but I need to stretch more. I was stretching for a little bit in the mornings. But anyway, go ahead, Tyler. What's your answer?
Best advice in my 30s? I don't know if I can single it down to like a particular decade. I mean, I feel like something that wifey loves about me, she says like I'm just really level-headed a lot, right? And my whole shit is, bro, don't sweat the small shit. And like 99% of the shit is the small shit. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like when I'm worrying about something, it's legit something that needs to be worried about. You feel me? So that's just kind of how I approach it. Like, don't sweat the small shit. And most of the shit is the small shit, bro.
Bro, that is to be able to put the adequate amount of worry on things is like, you feel me? I don't really trip off small shit a lot. But there's shit that I trip off that doesn't deserve the energy I'm giving. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's a special trait. But I think these both came from my mom. And I think this is something that just kind of, these are like her life mottos. But like the first one is fuck the dumb shit, which is kind of like what you know what I mean? Give the right amount of energy. Like, so fuck the dumb shit, bro. Like, fuck the dumb shit, dog. Don't even trip off none of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Focus on you. And then one thing she always says is, like, if I present an idea to her, like, we're always bouncing ideas. We're an idea ass family, bro. Like, my dad, you know, the 4 times I talked to him in a year, like, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? My mom, we always bouncing our ideas off each other and shit. And so, like, she'll always say, like, Nike said, just do it. Like, bro, if you have something you want to do, just fucking do it. Get out there, try the shit. You know what I mean? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I mean, just that has helped me out so much with just trying shit. Just get out here and do it. Make it happen. It might not look exactly like you wanted to or feel the exact way, but you're putting something out and you're working with those particular muscles. So at some point you can get to that point where you can make shit in your mind exactly way you want it to be. You know what I mean? And also, like, I mean, me and Mike were talking about this. We're like, we just have people that, you know, we put up multiple shots. You feel me? Like, at least on the pod, Tyler's a person that, you know, he dropped one, that motherfucker hook, pow.
You Tyler's going to stab you one time and it's going to go between the ribs, not touch any cartilage.
He got the order, bro. He got the order. You out of there. You know what I'm saying? We going to hit you like, you know, 30 times. We going to, you know, we'll find the order some way. You feel me?
Weave a little bit.
Right. You feel me? But put up multiple shots, man. You know what I'm saying? Get your chance to, you know, so like you, that's how I talk. That's how I move. But
fuck the dumb shit and just do it. The intersection of the two things you guys just said, and this is kind of weird, but this is advice I think I've only given to people in person. There's like a Latin phrase, memento mori or whatever, that just means like, remember that you're going to die. Like, when I first started out as a journalist in my early 20s, it's a horrible field to be in. I was working like 70 hours a week for like $500 a month or something. You know what I mean? And like, I would get so stressed out about whether I was going to make it or something. And the only way I could relax was to just sit there and go, you are going to die at some point. Mm-hmm. And like, none of this is ultimately that consequential. Like, the world is not going to stop spinning based on what happens to you. Like, you could just go and work at Trader Joe's if you need to feed yourself. Like, what, you know what I mean? And, but I do think about that sometimes, partially because my job requires me to write, I don't know, a dozen or so obituaries a year. I just try and think of like the end of the life perspective. Like, is this something that people are going to talk about at my funeral? And if not, then why am I wasting a sunny day on it today? You know what I mean? Like, it's just not necessarily worth that. I know some people I've told that to think that's kind of bleak, but it truly is for me a good perspective adjuster of like what Tyler was talking about. Like, does this actually matter or not? You know, like, whether my kid gets into the college he's trying to get into, yeah, like that matters to some point. Biko says Valor Morgulis. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but I think of that. In terms of the hobbies one, there's a stand-up comedian, I don't remember who it was, but I've seen this clip online that's talking about being a white dude who's super into history is like the Republican starter set. Like, that's definitely true.
I think,
like,
Shane Gillis said that shit. I think.
Oh, is that Shane Gillis? Okay. Yeah, I think so. That sounds like a Shane Gillis joke for sure. But that's a, like, if you have a white friend in his mid 30s who's getting really into World War II history, you just got to watch out, bro. Like,
yeah. I was going to say something along those lines. Like, I think people who collect like historical artifacts, there's a very thin line there. Like, why the fuck does Darren Rovell have a fucking letter from MLK from the Birmingham jail? Like, of all motherfucking people on the planet, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit like that is like, is a very, very thin line between you being a fucking colonizer with that shit or you being like a someone who appreciates history. So,
fact.
All right. I like words, but the thing that always trips me out when people use the word effervescent, I'm like, nigga, I don't know. It just makes me think you're pretentious.
Effervescent seems like a US word, bro. I'm being honest with you.
I don't, but that's just my thing. You know what I'm saying? Okay. We're like, that's what I feel like.
It's like Char with the fish that have the long noses. She sees it and she gets so fucking pissed off. She just does not fuck with them.
It's irrational. I love words. You say words just to tickle me. Yeah. And I'll be like, ooh, that's a great word. You know what I mean? But for whatever reason, that word, I hear that word and I'm like, that's leaning into, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean? And juxtapose is another word too, because being in art school where everybody said juxtapose every time they're presenting, I'm like, can we just create something and not juxtapose? Like, is all art is juxtaposing shit? Fuck juxtapose, nigga. Like,
dog, I feel that way about so much of language. And like, I hate that Republicans have decided DEI is their new N-word, because like, I hated DEI for like principle reasons because I hate how corporate it is. And yeah, now I have to defend it because they're like setting up camp against it or whatever. But like covering school board meetings and listening to like people refer to everything as a space, like Shars on the Parks and Rec Commission, all they talk about is activating spaces. It's like, you mean having kids play in the park?
Right, right. Somebody's
or like, no, bro. Like at the school board meetings, they'll refer to schools as school sites. It's like, you mean schools? Bro, like you're just adding an extra word onto the word that you're talking about. Like you could just say schools. Bro.
If you're saying like stuff like playground culture unironically.
Yeah.
I hate you know people like the so-and-so culture. I'm like, that's not.
Or like, like lived experiences is a big one for me, bro.
That's a.
Say people's lives. Just talk about people like they're human beings.
Net new. I told you about that. Yeah. Net new. It's just new. It's new. Anyway, we're getting away from the question.
I feel like I use lived experiences every now and then. I usually feel like that's me telling like white people to shut up about shit.
Yes, right.
Context always matters. But in general, the people that use it.
It's a politer way of saying shut the fuck up. And it's the politeness about it. But it's, I don't, the way you use it, I have no problem with. When white people talk to other white people about, we have to consider their lived experiences. It's like,
But also, like, if y'all were to say effervescence, I wouldn't feel effervescent or whatever. Like, I wouldn't feel a particular way because we have, you know, if we're meeting for the first time and you use effervescent in like the first 30 minutes of me knowing you,
I feel the opposite of you. I feel like that would be such a positive indicator for me. But I understand what you're saying.
That word in particular is just that word. You can use, you know what I'm saying.
I remember in college, one of my best friends to this day, the first time I met him, my other homie brought him through, and they was talking about the club. And I knew he was going to be my homie because they was talking about when they went to the club the other night, and bro said, man, it was a plethora of hoes in there. And I was like, this guy, still my homie plethora. To this day.
I'm right? a big fan of plethora. I love words in general, but effervescent for some reason. It's just the word. But yeah, plethora of hoes, nigga.
Yeah, I knew right then and there that he was my type of people. Still friends to this day, bro.
Real nigga. Real nigga. He stamped. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Kevridge asks, what's good? This is some high shit I've been wondering about. What would be harder for a basketball team, playing in flip-flops or playing with an eye patch?
One second, though. But plethora of hoes is a 2000 ass. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All that was when that was that was when that was going to be used, bro.
Yeah.
I sucked back to like fight music in the club when I heard that. You feel what I'm saying? But go ahead, my bad.
All right. This is Mr. Kevridge asks, what would be harder for a basketball team, playing in flip flops or playing with an eye patch?
I think the obvious answer here is flip flops, but eye patch is eye patch got a case because if you've only got one eye, your depth perception is fucked up, right?
Yep.
And you need that. You'd for sure need that in engaging your passes, engaging your jump shots and all that shit. But but I feel like if everyone's in flip-flops, there's kind of an
He said one person, though. I think he said one person, right?
He said basketball team. What would be harder?
A whole team? Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's eye patch. I think you're absolutely right. And I actually, this is how deep into youth baseball coach culture I am. I've made kids do the drill to teach them how important it is that they have both eyes on the ball where they try and hit with one eye closed, and none of them can do it. Like, you need both those eyes to locate the depth of the basketball hoop. Like, you need both eyes. I think it's the eye patch.
I think the thing is, like, with shooting, it would be difficult, but with, like, layups, it wouldn't be as difficult. Like, flip-flops are difficult in every fucking way. I can barely.
Are we talking thong flip flops here? The worst flip flops.
That's what I'm talking about. Thong. That's what I'm talking about. Thong. That's what I was thinking. I wouldn't think it's slides. I'm thinking thong flip flops. So I feel like it would be that, but I do get it. What you guys are saying, because I had a friend. His name was Dario. Niggas don't know. I don't say his last name. Best handles I've ever seen. I swear to God. One day I looked outside in high school, and like he was dribbling the ball down the street in the summer in Alabama, like hot as fuck. No shirt on. He looked like the N1 fucking the man, bro. I'm like, this nigga, what is this alien? Is he going to try out for the squad? Like, crazy. The nigga couldn't shoot for shit, though. And part of the reason was because he would look around the ball when he shot. He shot from right between his face, in the middle of his face. And he would look around the ball. He only used one eye. And he had the ugliest, like, the flattest jumper I've ever seen. So I do respect that one eye is difficult. like one of the best ball handlers I've ever seen. Shot with one eye and couldn't hit a fucking shot. But I just think it, the flip-flops affect everything you do. So that's why I say flip-flops.
All right. we've got three questions, and then we have like a longer like emotional advice question. So the three questions we'll go through and give somewhat, not truncated, but you know, some regular length answers. This is from Isak. Says, what's up? First time, long time. Tyler's my favorite Twitter follow and has been since I was in high school. A while back, he tweeted a GIF of Samoa Joe doing his walk-off bit, so I realized he knows ball like a motherfucker. So the question for everyone is, are you still current wrestling fans? If so, what would y'all want to see happen in WWE or AEW, or who do you support? If not, what and who were your favorites across time? From Isak.
I was a wrestling fanatic growing up, bro. Because I feel like, you know, our generation, we timed up in the two biggest eras. We were little kids during the Hulkamania era, and we were, you know, like teenagers, middle schoolers during the Attitude era, right? Like just a perfect combination where, you know, we were kids who were rooting for the faces, you know, when we were in first and second grade. Then we become these, you know, rebellious teenagers who think that the faces suck, and, you know, the heels like DX and NWO are all the rage during the Attitude era. So, you know, that kind of resonated with us as teens. So I was a huge fucking wrestling fanatic, but I just kind of fell off like once I went to college because I didn't have time to just be, you know, and huddling down in front of my TV. Like, you know, it's girls out here and shit. You know what I'm saying?
There was a plethora of hoes. You feel what I'm saying?
So and that's not a shot like wrestler fans don't get girls. Please don't take it that way. But I still casually keep up with it. You know, like I said, I think I'm going to always have the love in it for me. Like, I think the fucking Bloodline line that's been going on with Roman Reigns and the Usos has been incredible. The shit that they've got cooking up with Rock and Cody Rhodes for WrestleMania is incredible. I love the girls too, like Jade Cargill, like Bianca Belair. Oh my God, are y'all hip to her? Like, bro, two black girls, beautiful, and they're both in the WWE. But yeah,
I am hip to Jade Cargill.
Oh, hey,
I'm familiar. Smoke with
show. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jay Cargill and Bianca Belair, man. I'm telling you, bro.
Smoke show. But, I never heard time, you man. Say that before.
Oh, there we go. I'm a smoke show sayer, bro.
You a smoke show sayer? Yeah, you lead it. White people did their thing with that. They did their thing.
But like I always have love for wrestling, and I always kind of, you know, just keep up with the pulse of it. But, you know, it's not something that I locked into like I used to. But I always got love for it.
Y'all, like, I never really fucked with wrestling. And it's not because wrestling wasn't dope, man. It was like, I never really fucked with wrestling. I never really fucked with video games. Like, I was just outside. I was a country-ass nigga out in the woods and fields playing all the time and shit like that. So, like,
you're
when y'all be talking
like
about
one of my favorite bits that, like, all my friends I've been around for a long time know I do this bit, which is anytime I missed out on an experience from childhood, even if they're talking about something that happened when we were four, I'll say I was just like, I was too busy. I just was fucking so many like hot chicks. Like, I just, so that's, but they'll do that and be like,
outside
oh, like,
is fucking hot chicks. Back,
man, I was over here with these fucking.
commonly known as the little Boosie defense.
Tell mama we thugging outside. We don't need cable. Right? So,
yeah. I wasn't thugging, nigga, but yeah. I was just out, nigga. Like, when y'all be talking about, like, you know what I'm saying, video games and fucking comic books and shit, I'm like, nigga, I just was outside, man. Either I was outside or reading a fucking book. That was it. So, like, yeah, bro, I did not fuck with wrestling. The last time I really fucked with wrestling, I think, like, it was like the Ultimate Warrior or something. I probably watched it like 15 times my
terrible
entire
fucking
life.
Human,
maybe
by
10.
The way
I heard that. I mean, the Hulk was fucking terrible human, you know what I'm saying? Randy Savage, I don't know how he was or not, but you know, snapping to a Slim Jim ass nigga.
I remember when motherfucking.
I ain't know nothing about these niggas.
No,
man.
I remember when Earthquake broke Hulk Hogan's ribs and they had a whole right to Hulk Hogan while he's in that hospital shit. I wrote a letter to that motherfucker and my pop sent it off for me. And then I find out this motherfucker would have called me a nigger to my little 6-year-old face probably, right? like
he might have read it and said it in his head. You know what I'm saying? Like.
Hulk Hogan was legit the first athlete that I was like obsessed with. I don't view WWE as I don't view professional wrestling as a sport because, you know, of course, the outcomes are predetermined. But I for sure think that professional wrestlers are athletes, right?
Oh, facts. Facts.
Yeah, and Hulk Hogan was my first athlete I was obsessed with, like, from when I was, like, 5 years old.
My only wrestling story was that there was an N64 WWE game, right, that was, like, one versus one.
And WCW NWO Revenge.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
I was just like good at video games, like not in a way that, you know, like, oh, not in an obnoxious
I still remember
way.
That motherfucking Goldberg spear. You hit the down yellow arrow and motherfucking beat it. You hit down yellow to run and beat a lunge at the motherfucker. Still remember that shit.
My friend was obsessed with wrestling.
You said,
yeah,
what?
I would go over to his house and I would beat him at that game and he would get so pissed off because he was like, you don't even fucking know anything about these guys.
Just nasty you button, know the bro. Game, nigga.
Like, I know how to block
how
my
to
brother.
Beat your ass, though.
How to beat your ass. Do you think saying I was outside is a humble brag? I feel like I missed out on culture.
No, okay.
I think I missed out on so much shit because I was just fucking country and musty outside. It's accurate.
It's accurate, yeah. But it is also like, well, I was too busy playing basketball with my friends to watch wrestling. Like,
I was playing basketball instead of watching basketball. Like, no, that's not how I mean. I'm just, nigga, I was ripping and running, doing what we might have been on fucking BMX bikes or fucking digging
holes
in the
dirt. That's
where
my bit came from, was similarly being like, oh, like I was reading a lot of books, so like I didn't see that or whatever. You know, like there's no thing you could say that doesn't sound like a humble brag, even though you're just being honest, which is why I just took it to the extreme of like, shh, I was getting pussy at five, bro. Like,
are you kidding me?
Y'all were going to concerts, like that's cool, bro. I just
weird,
I was over
but
here
okay.
On my game, you know what I mean? I actually do that. I make that joke. That's like one of the longest running bits. I think Shar and I have had that going since we were in high school before we were growing up. I'd be like, oh yeah, I missed out on that one. I just schedule was pretty full.
Oh man. You was out here Huberman-ing, you know what I'm saying? You was juggling, you feel me? Man, damn, Huberman, they got you, dog.
This is from P. Eagle, who I thought was just Peagle on Twitter, but I get from the email signature I'm gathering that is P. Eagle.
He's been fucking with us for a minute, too.
I like mailbags because I like being able to interact with the people that really fuck with the pod like that, too. Just wanted to know what y'all think about the NFL taking over Christmas, which they just announced they're doing a Christmas Day game, even though it's going to be on a Wednesday. And what combination of LeBron, Wemby, Steph, and Ant Adam Silver is going to have to sacrifice to ratings Jesus to have a shot at people giving a shit? Keep up the firework. Much love. And long live the brown sugar bacon sandwich.
Hell yeah. That's the brown sugar bacon sandwich. Arby's got the meats, my boy. There is no way that any iteration of what Adam Silver rolls out can compete with the NFL.
Period.
He could roll out his biggest stars. He could roll out, you know, a fucking, you know, Wemby LeBron, Wemby Steph, or however you want to play it. And it will not fuck with like a fucking Jacksonville fucking Houston game or whatever have you, right? So it's NFL is king. Ain't no way around it, bro. And the NBA is just going to have to settle for being a respectable second. And they just got to make sure that respectable is respectable. Like, that's what they need to focus on.
When Draymond talked about the Rockets, I don't give a fuck about the Rockets. That's how America feels about basketball, brother. When it comes to football, baby, we don't give a fuck. We ain't going to be there, brother. You know what I mean? So there is nothing that man can do. And this is somebody that doesn't really watch football. I know what time it is, though, for sure.
The NFL's ratings were up 7%. The average regular season game got 17.9 million viewers in the most recent season. So I don't know what to tell you. If you know anything about TV ratings, we don't determine whether we like things or not based on the ratings, but your average, like Tyler said, we're not talking about Pat Mahomes versus Josh Allen. We're talking about Jaguars Texans at 10 a.m. on Sunday. 18 million human Americans are watching television, bro.
That is insane.
And there is nothing left in the country, not politics, not entertainment, not sports. There's nothing left in the country that has that kind of gravitational pull. So it is what it is.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of it.
Like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Elijah New, first of all, I think we accidentally read his full name on a previous question that maybe I shouldn't have done it. My bad.
No, I think he said I did it. I actually read that.
Oh,
I think
you?
He said
okay.
But he said, but his Twitter name was his government.
He said, P.S., he said, I had to change my Twitter name when I sent something to John and he used it on the pod. Shit used to be my full government name. And the silence after he read my Twitter handle was loud as hell. Sorry, bro.
My apologies, my guy.
Now it's Elijah New, K-N-E-W. So this isn't really a question. I wanted to hear y'all thoughts on the shift in sports media that's allowing more black people and other people of color to be their authentic selves and still talk about sports on a national level in the larger spaces and have a reach who just didn't have in the past beyond the Italian Mike Tirico, Stephen A. Smith, and Bryant Gumbel. 10 years ago, I don't think I would have believed anyone if they told me Cameron and Mace had a sports talk show with O.J. Simpson. Same goes for what Ryan Clark has done, Taylor Rooks, Josiah Trill, Shannon Sharp, Ocho Cinco, with both soccer and football, as well as new guys like Kenny Beecham. Dope to see, and I'm curious if you guys had any thoughts on this or the current media landscape in general.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. You know, like he mentioned Kenny Beecham. That's the homie right there. Like, I love what he does. And you know, he's a kid who I'm not sure what his, you know, collegiate chops are, if he even has any, if he has a degree, what have you, but that doesn't necessarily matter in today's you know, media landscape. The motherfucker knows basketball. He knows how to discuss it, you know, intelligently. He knows how to discuss it entertainingly, and that's really all that fucking matters right now, right? Like, you know, it's kind of tying back into like the blog era discussion we had earlier, where, you know, the best thing about that era was how the gatekeepers who were keeping all this good stuff from us were gone, right? It was just, you know, artists to the fucking web, no middleman. And that's been one of the things that I have loved about social media, is that it's given voices to people that gatekeepers would have kept out, right? Like, it's given, you know, we came up in the era where basically you had to get on ESPN to kind of be a respected sports head, a respected sports, you know, talking head. And now that's just not the case anymore. Right. Like, of course, ESPN is still the big show. But now, bro, if you can culminate a following on social media, if you're interesting, if you're funny, if you're insightful, you're going to get a following and you can probably monetize that and maybe change your motherfucking life. So, you know, I love it.
Do you think that is going to continue? Do you think that's changing? I mean, I think it could continue, but the path will be a little different. I wonder if people could, you know, get to the point that we are doing what we've done. I think you might have to take a different path than we took at this point. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm just wondering.
I feel like, there's in the sports commentary landscape, there's for sure been an influx of ex-athletes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
there's been a fucking ex-athlete boom the last 3 or 4 years or so, where it feels like they're the ones who are becoming, you know, the new media here. So you know, to your credit, you know, it might be a harder battle to fight now that you know, the big dogs who already have the eyes on them, like, you know, fucking Gilbert Arenas, he's going to get fucking 15 million views every video because motherfuckers know it's Gilbert Arenas, right? Like, he didn't necessarily have to cultivate a following. Like, he for sure put in the work on his pod. I'm not saying that. But motherfuckers knew coming out the gate who he was. They knew he was a funny dude. They knew he was going to say
the
some
brand awareness
shit.
Is there on launch.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It was always there. So, you know, it's a bit of an uphill battle that non-famous, non-ex-athletes have to fight here. That's way steeper than it was before, like I said, this whole ex-athlete boom that's happened as of late.
Everybody listed I'm a fan of. You know what I'm saying? I love what they're doing.
The only other thing I would say is, because I think we were a little bit negative in talking about how the blog era won't happen. That, like, to be like, this is the upside of it. The upside is, like, I became a Jenkins and Jones fan because you guys talked about sports and life the way that my friends talk about sports and life. So, I mean, think about, like, Stuart Scott was, like, my favorite ESPN personality because he was, like, 10% like what my actual friends sounded like in real life, you know? And so now it's, like, there's enough space for you guys to be yourselves. We talked about this, like, when you first started doing the podcast together, Desus and Mero were so revolutionary that people are like, these guys are like Desus and Mero. It's like, no, they're just our other types of people in the world.
We just
the one type of white
guy. You know what I'm saying?
Just like, two more black guys.
Bro.
they never saw that before, Desus and Mero. Like all jokes aside.
It's crazy because all of my conversations mimic these conversations we have. Yes. You know what I'm saying? I don't have friends that aren't like us. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So, like, yeah, but so people were just shocked that there was more than one of, you know, go ahead.
Right. So the downside of the way that, like, media has splintered is that you don't have these big things where it's like everyone watched SportsCenter. So everyone has a shared library of references to a thing they watched last night. The upside is you guys and what Elijah was talking about was that you can get stuff that is more like exactly what you want or like your friends or that you feel the most comfortable with. And that, like, that's, you have to see that as an upside. Like, I mean, obviously, you know what I mean? So, yeah, for sure.
I think the power of, like, shit like this, too, is the superpower is you being fucking regular. You know what I mean? Where, like, you can see yourself in the people you're watching. You know what I mean? And I think when I was watching shit as a kid, I never saw that. You know what I'm saying? Like, we are friends with Tyler. You know what I'm saying? Tyler, I am. You know what I'm saying? But, like, prior to that, I felt like he was my friend. Like, I knew, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so I think that's the difference. And I think that's also what's dope is, like, I don't think you get that same feeling of, you know, that the meme where the guy's playing with the cardboard cutouts of, you know what I'm saying? And that people were like, that's why I feel listening to Jenkins and Jones, where, you feel me? Like, I'm not a part of the show, but I'm a part of the show. That's what you don't get with the ESPNs or even, like, the huge podcasts where these are people that you probably might never even meet, let alone know in your life. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So,
all right. This is the last question from quote, a fellow fan of Yearning and R&B. I think this is a heartfelt question. I think I know what all of our answers are going to be, but here we go. I'm a 26-year-old guy dealing with a Cupid's arrow stuck in my side for a while. There's a beautiful woman that I've known for a while. We're from the same city, went to school together, mutual friends, the whole nine yards. Through high school and college, we'd run into each other every now and then through friends and exchange pleasantries, but never for any extended period of time to really connect. I knew enough to know we have similar values and a similar perspective on life, but not a great deal of other details. Through circumstances too broad to explain in this email, there ended up being a couple of occasions where I got two really sweet and personal handwritten messages from her, and the fall after we graduated from college, I went to a holiday get-together at hers where we ended up making short conversation again. I'm not the most confident guy, but I'm also not overly self-deprecating. So I chalked up all of our interactions to her being a really kind soul and a nice friend rather than any romantic interest. One of the last things I ever want to be is a wear my hug at ass dude. Fast forward a couple of months, she added me on social media and I reached back out to ask if she would ever like to link up to grab some coffee or food. She responded yes, but unfortunately COVID hit its peak almost immediately after that exchange. At this moment in time, I had moved back to the hometown for work, but she had settled in an adjacent state a couple hours driving distance away. I was living on my own, but still going to my parents' place a lot to help around the house, and the last thing I wanted to do was risk getting them sick, so I never ended up linking up with her. Over the past year, since the beginning of COVID, the vaccine, and life in general, we've only corresponded through a couple of very short complimentary DMs. In so many ways, I'm still trying to pick up the warped pieces of my life since the beginning of the pandemic, for sure. But I think of her often. Should I just charge this situation to the game and let time sandpaper down my feelings for her, or should I try and reconnect with her? If it's the latter, how can I be more intentional but measured? Signed, a fellow fan of yearning in R&B. Man, if you don't go fucking ask this girl out, bro, like...
Bro! Ain't no other way to do... Bro, ask her out and see what happens. One of the things that I live by, too, is I don't want to leave this motherfucker with no regrets, dog. You know what I'm saying? Dog, that's just... At least you'll know. You feel me? And you won't have this hanging over your head. Bro, ask her out, please. And then hit us up and let us know how it went.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I was I'm invested in this, now.
I was in the same situation with my current wife of, let me do the math, 17 years. who I asked out a couple of times in high school and she said no. And similarly, I was like, dude, we're close friends. I'm not trying to be the friend that's like, that, you know, is making her uncomfortable that she's annoyed at or whatever. But we clearly, in my mind, as we had graduated in the first month or two after graduation, I felt like there was some more going on. You know what I mean? But I still was like, I'm not going to, I asked her out twice. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be that.
You ain't
want to
press it. You know what I mean? For sure. Yeah.
And my best friend literally was like, stop being a fucking idiot. Just ask her out, bro. And
I would have called a bitch. Stop being a bitch.
You called me a bitch, bro.
Okay. I'm going to say, come on. I was like, come on. This is the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bitch was the best case scenario for what he called her, for sure.
Right. For sure. Go ahead.
But listen, man, yes, you have a handwritten note from, you have all this other stuff. Like what I would say to you is this. Go to her and say, hey, man, like, I've really had feelings for you for a while. And I was talking to my friend about it. And when I ran him through the situation, my friend was like, stop being a fucking idiot to ask this girl out. Right. Blame us. You refer to just call us the friend. But there's clearly enough there. I understand that not wanting to be a where's my hug type person. But like, clearly she feels a connection with you. She's been the one to initiate contact several times and stuff like that, too. So like, just give it a shot. But like John said, even if you have a 1% shot, it sounds to me like I think you got a pretty good shot, bro. But even if you got a 1% shot, like John said, you don't lose anything, bro. Like, and you, trust me when I say you will feel better, even if the answer is no, you'll feel better having an answer to the question than I know how these situations are, dog. I wasn't sleeping at all for like 2 months. Like, just get the answer to the question, you know?
That whole stomach hurting, looking up at the ceiling at 3 a.m, bro, dog. It ain't the way to go, G. Get the answer to the question and definitely ask her out. And I think the thing is, too, you can ask her out. And even if the answer, it seems like she fucks you hellas based on what you said. But even if she doesn't, like, dog, it doesn't mean that y'all can't be cool or whatever, bro. Yeah. It's not, you know what I mean? Like, I think the only way to solve this is to go ahead and be open and honest about how you feel. And, you know, yeah, bro, definitely ask her out.
Put yourself out there.
Don't do this to yourself. Don't tell yourself no.
Right.
Don't get in your own way. You know what I mean? So yeah, G.
Yeah,
I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for y'all because you know what I'm saying. I'm rooting for both of y'all for sure.
That's a fact. But this feels to me like one of those threads where like women are tweeting like about how bad men are at picking up signs. You know what I mean? Oh.
And as a man that's been horrible his entire life, they're right.
They are right.
They are extremely right.
All right, man. Well, best of luck. Please do let us know how it goes. Shoot us a follow-up email for sure. But we're wishing you luck. Put yourself out there. Look at it as a risk reward. If she says no, that's a positive, to be honest with you, because you will have the question answered. If she says yes, I mean, you know, like all three of us are wife guys. I can't even
invite us to the wedding.
All right, that's all the time we got. We'll be back on Monday with our next regular episode. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in with mailbag questions. We really appreciate everyone who fucks with the pod. We fuck with you guys even heavier. We'll see y'all soon. Hope you enjoy your weekend. Bye.
Bye.
The Volume.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.